to reap what we sow. So if you're miserable around here, if you say, well, I ain't got no joy in my life, I ain't got a relationship, I haven't got this, I haven't got that, and you're doing all that what you haven't got, get your ass a newcomer and start planting some shit that you want, and my guess is that God will bring it into your life. We need to really value some newcomers around here. Well, now I hear people say, well, let me sign my name on this list. If you need me, call me. The way I got it was, listen, son of a gun, I'm going to call your ass and you better be ready. See, because it wasn't, my sponsor knew that he could not keep what he had unless he gave it away. This is not rocket scientist stuff. This is some simple spiritual principles. From years 5 to 15, I think we grow by giving it away. See, I think the first 5 years we change our heads. We think a lot. We think great thoughts. We change our whole way of thinking. Right? You start carrying people to meetings, making coffee, cleaning up, getting involved in service, doing those kinds of things, you will change your heart. You will change your heart. You will change your capacity to love. You will change your capacity to be loved. And then you start really reaping all this joy and stuff by doing that. And, oh, but I got to tell you, if you think you're going to reap it from all that joy from the person you're giving it to, we don't get grateful for a long time, man. You don't look to the person that you give it to. See, we great negotiators. I mean, we've been negotiating for dope all along. We know how to trade, man. You know, we can sell we can trade ourselves, our money, anything. We can sell some stuff. We can sell some stuff. But learning to give it away is where we at. See, and we can't say, well, you know, I took that person to a meeting and I did all that and go and tell everybody in the rooms what you're doing for somebody, right? I'm carrying this stuff, right? And then wonder why they're ungrateful. That ungrateful son of a bitch, I gave him everything! No. If we do that, we have a right to look to God to do for us. I have fun with God. See, God has fun with me back. But this is one of fun. This is one of the funnest things I have with God. See, I say, if you're God, you got to outgive me. See, because if I give it away, you got to give me more back, or you ain't God. Because then I'm God. If I can give more away than you can give, then you're God. Those are kind of simple discussions I have with my God. And you know what? I keep getting farms and diplomas and new parts of my company and more grandkids to love, another song to play. And I say, you're a tricky God, man. But I'm going to try to outgive you again. I'm going to tell my wife tonight that one-on-one private quiet dinner that we had planned, that I'm going to come over here and share a message of recovery. She's going to say, okay, you owe me big. Because she gave me something. She wants something bigger back. That's where I am with God. I give him something. I look for something bigger back. I look for it. Because he cannot be God unless he does that. So if you run around helping people, and I look at the things in my life that have happened, and I can't figure out how they all have happened. See, because I have been involved in service since the day I walked in here. Because I have had some men who have been very wise and loving and caring and taught me what I'm just sharing right here. You got to give it away to get it. Mind, I talked about that paradox when I said that you find what you seek, and I don't want you to seek anything because I want you to trust God to bring it into your life tonight. That's another one of them paradoxes. And here's another one, man. Here's another one. This one I'd like to do to God, too. Well, God, I can't give it away unless I got it. So give it to me first. And he does. You cannot give something away to somebody that you don't have. Although you look around here, you're gonna try. I mean, you hear people try to do that. But, man, one thing an addict can do, he can look right through. He knows the bullshit and we see it. But we're so good at that shit, man. We can pick them out. We can choose whether we want to continue to be sick or not. My sponsor told me, Bob, you can choose whether you want to have a good day. You can choose the kind of man that you want to be. What? You mean I don't have to be the person my parents want me to be? Or that delinquent that society told me I was? Or that crazy, sick, schizophrenic, homicidal, suicidal, drug addict that I am? You mean I don't have to be that? You mean I can choose today to be the kind of man that I want to be? If you know the kind of person you want to be, you'll know the kind of God you need to support you in being that person. And how do I find out what kind of man I want to be? I started looking at the other men in my life without competing against them. I started looking at them for what they had that I did not have. And I started to ask them, how did you get it? How'd you get that? How'd you get that patience? How can you be so tolerant of that stuff? I had a guy that I sponsored who was working with this newcomer who went out 8 times. I said, you're enabling him. You're nuts. You're wasting your time. Wait till he's ready. He just said, Bob, nah, man. I like this guy. The reason I wasn't 12-stepping was I didn't like him. I didn't have that love in my heart. God didn't put that in my heart. See, we don't do it. God puts it in there, right? But it put it in there for him 8 times. That guy is clean over 20 years today. Right? He would not be clean today if he had taken my advice. Because I didn't believe. He believed. And you know what? When people say to me, I've been out 8 times and I'm coming back, I say, welcome, brother. God bless you. I'm happy that you are here. I'm happy that God give you this one more shot. I don't care if you pick up again, but you just tell me what I can do to help you stay in these rooms because I'm willing to try to help you to do that. Because I ain't here to judge how many times it takes you to get this message. My responsibility is to be willing to deliver it on demand. Like that little man with the beeper. Beep, beep. See, if I was out there selling, I'd home deliver today too. See? But you get a phone call to do a 12-step and you say, I'm not feeling good tonight. Can you get somebody else? Hey, how about opening this meeting? Oh, I can't do that. I got another thing. I got something. Oh, man. And if we don't have it, you want to be quick-witted? Have somebody ask you to do something in here and just see how quick all these other reasons and excuses for not doing it fly into your mind. But we can't get well. We can't get rid of our pain unless we can get outside of ourselves. And so, the ability to choose, what kind of man do I want to be? And see, when I know what kind of man I want to be, I can go about being that kind of man in every situation. See, once I decide to be that kind of man, I know this probably hasn't happened to you, but it's happened to me. I've been in a relationship where you start fighting and you say, is it me? No. It's her. I know it's her. No, well, could it be me? I'm open-minded. No, it's got to be her. No, it's got to be me. What did this thing start about? Where are we at? I'm in the kill mode. You don't know what started it, how you got there, or how you got to where you're at, but you're way out there. You don't know who she is or how she got to be from this loving woman that you committed to and loved to this bitch that's out there now.
And she's wondering how this loving guy who loved to do all these things with her before she was married doesn't like to do them now and is such a bastard. Or, here's another classic one. Have you ever had somebody meaningful in your life, like at least a two-week-long relationship, end it? And you say, oh, God, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. I don't know whether I can live or die or what's going on here. I'm just so crazy. That's experience I'm sharing right there. But to find me, all I have to do is take my fourth step. I do not have to take hers. I don't have to take anybody else's fourth step to find out the kind of man that I want to be. I do not have to look out here to find me. I don't have to look out here to find God. I've got to look in here, in this mind, in this heart, and in this soul. I've got to look in. I got to turn all them eyes that have been looking out there trying to figure out what it is going on out there into seeing, am I being the kind of man that I chose to be? Am I living the way I believe that God that I turned my will and my life over to wants me to believe? People say, I don't know what God's will for me is. No, if you don't have an understanding of God, you know what God's will. You might not want to know. See, because after you take that third step, you cannot do stuff with impunity anymore. If I go out on my wife today, I could do it, but I could not do it without a guilty conscience. And I could not walk in my door with that guilty conscience without her knowing it. So my shit's up. Because if I do it, the world knows it. Because I don't live any secret lives today. I don't have this life with this person and this set of folks and this life over here with this set of folks and this set of values and this set over here. I don't try to live more than one life today. And in my addiction, I tried to live many lives at the same time because I was not happy with any of them. Today, I just want to live one, but I want to be happy in it. And all I got to do to be happy in it is to be the kind of man I choose to be. And according to my understanding of the God that I have chosen, see, because I choose my God today. I choose. My God says to me, you choose our relationship. You choose how our relationship will be. I'm not superimposing any dogma on you here. You have that choice. I gave you that back in your second step. You can choose me. Or you can choose to let your self-will run riot. In which case, I will inflict pain on you. Sodom and Gomorrah was nothing to what I'll do to you. Because my God will go to any lengths to get the message to me that I need to change. When I'm feeling those kind of pains today, I know I need to change. I already just started to move into those secrets. See, because after I know my own will, my sponsor said to me, Bob, if there's 100 numbers in a column here and you wanted to change the sum of those 100 numbers, how many digits would you have to change? Another trick question. One. And what's the easiest one to change? Me. Because when I try to change you, I'm not working my program, I'm working your program. And I know you'd tell me that in a heartbeat. But you know what? Once I call my life into question, and once I reorient myself, somehow I can turn over all this insanity of children running crazy, of people coming in and out of my lives, of people that I love and dearly care for dying. I can turn that over to God, see? And I can go to that God and say, comfort me. I can go to a meeting and I can say, I am in pain. And somebody will say, what is it? Even if just for gossip. But it don't matter because I get to pour it out. See, because we get to come here and pour our hearts out. We get to come here and share our secrets. We get to come here and dispel our fears. If we keep our fears in ourselves, they grow. Give an example. You're a child at night. You hear a bump in the night. That's a boogeyman. Oh, that might even be Satan.
Oh, if you're Irish, that might be the Banshees. But when you let that out, you say, Granny, what's that noise?
She said, I just dropped my hairbrush. Go to sleep.
But if I wouldn't have said, Grammy, what is that? I'd have built that thing up into a terrible fear. See, we come in here sometimes and we keep it to ourselves and we build terrible, terrible fears. In my sixth and seventh step, I learned the difference between changing my mind and changing my heart. Think about it. How many times did you change your mind about what you were going to wear here tonight? And Roger, I'm going to tell you, Roger, you are a fashion king with that raccoon coat, man. I mean, I'm telling you, I smelled it coming, you know. Lord, when I saw it, I said, oh my God, I am fashionably defunct today. You still love me anyway, right? Buy the coat in a bigger size next time, man. Sure. I know you're self-centered to buy it in your size and not mine. We change our mind like this. But our heart. How do we change our heart? We humbly ask God, God, look into my heart. Take my will in my life. Change it. Take my fears. Take it. Change my heart. You ever saw somebody that's been really ignorant all their lives and says, man, did you see so-and-so? Man, they had a real change of heart. See, we see when people have a change of heart. Sets us up for our eight and ninth steps of reconciliation. Sometimes our mind confuses our heart. The mind's the fast game. The heart's the slow game. God changes what is inside of us. Our mind is always reacting to what's outside of us. Our heart is reacting to what's inside of us. What's inside of us is what's reacting with our heart. And we want God to change that heart. We want God to make that heart tolerant and open and loving. See, because when we know what kind of person we want to be, we know what kind of heart we need to power that. We like the Tin Man, man. Or the Lion. Which one of them characters had that heart? Man? The Tin Man, okay. There you go, thank you. He was an addict, the Lion. I used to talk to him when I used to do acid. He used to talk back. God, the 60s. My grandmother told me about him. I'm not really that old, folks. You know, I woke up one day, and all of a sudden it bothered me that my wife was smoking. And I said, Dora, you know what? I'm worried that you're going to get lung cancer and die. I hate to smell that smoke. I got to breathe secondary smoke. It's not good for my health. You set a bad example for the kids. You spend money. There's dirty ashtrays laying around. You burn little holes and shit. You got to stop this. I wasn't going to use the F word tonight, but I'm going to use it in a quote. Fuck you. I said, what? What? That's when I got into one of the things I was talking about in that four step, when it got all the way out there and you don't know who it is. But I knew what to do by that time. When I started to work on 8 and 9, God started getting me there. I knew where my sponsor lived. I went in up to him. And see, I used to have one of them sponsors that if I went up there and he let me say anything I wanted about this woman, but what he would not say is anything bad about her. He would not ask me, well, what do we need to do to change her? He would say, what do we need to do to change you? He would not let me moan and bitch. But I went up there and I said that, man, I told her about the smoking, and I'm right. And he, first time, says to me, you know what? You're right. You're right. But you know what, Bob? You're going to be the most rightest, alonest person that God ever made. Because it ain't about being right. It's about being together. Now, the question is, do you value your relationship with this woman more than you value being right? Oh, these conflicts. God, but I'm right. You know, it's so damn few times that I'm right. I don't want to surrender being right. The Irish people have a real hard time with being right. We love it. That's why we're cops. We get on a self-righteous horse, white horse, and swindle. God, I hate to give it up. But I value that relationship enough that I would give up anything. I just didn't know about that. I didn't know that it wasn't important for me to be right. And it didn't matter in a relationship who was right. Because he said to me, you know, Bob, in a relationship, it's like a pissing contest with a skunk. I said, is this another one of them monkey stories, man? No, Bob. He said, you can piss further. You can piss in more directions. You can piss yellower. But if you're pissing in a contest with a skunk, you cannot win. Because when that skunk pisses, it smells up everybody. See, and when you're in a relationship, it ain't about being right. Because you can be right and in pain. And I'm sure there are some people right here tonight who are right. Right? My God, right! But in pain and alone and saying, geez, I was right. Why did she leave? He taught me that when I change my heart, then I'm ready to change my amends and my relationships. And so if you're in pain and you ask God to change your heart, He will also give you the ability to go to the people within that relationship, and they'll know whether you've had a change of heart or whether you're just playing with your mind again. You had a change of heart. You can reconcile that relationship. In the beginning of NA, we had one meeting in Harrisburg. The only other meeting that we knew about on the East Coast was up in Williamsport. There was only like six or seven of us. I mean, we pissed each other off every meeting. But we didn't have any place else to go. We had to come back. See, sometimes here when people make mistakes, they steal money from the treasury. They fuck a newcomer. Excuse my language, but I'm being real. And we have not learned how to make amends. We haven't learned to forgive that person and let them stay in these rooms long enough to get well, and we drive people out because we don't like their behavior now. Man, there wasn't any place else for us to go. So we got a crash course in patience, tolerance, understanding, and forgiveness because we were injuring and forgiving each other on a daily basis. That's why God put those steps 8 and 9 in there. You know, in the 10th step, my sponsor said to me, you know what? Do you practice these principles? Sure I do. Well, what principle do you practice in the 4th step? I loved it when I had the right answer.
Well, I call my life into question. How? Well, against what I believe God wants me to do. Great. What's the purpose of the 10th step? Well, to do it on a daily basis? I had a quick one, man. You know what, Bob? He said, you know, sometimes we can get so self-absorbed. You know, we started this meeting, and we're all into each other now. We're into having a good time and sharing. But we started out remembering the newcomer. He said, you do that 10th step, Bob, so that you can get outside yourself and see that person who needs what you can give. You do that before you walk into a meeting so that you're not thinking about the last argument you had with your wife or what's happening in service that's upsetting you, that you get in there that you can't hear the speaker or you can't see the person in that room that's in pain. So do you take that 10th step? That 10th step's not only for you, man. It's for the newcomer. It's so that you can get outside of your shit long enough to see what you need to do for somebody else that will help you clean up the shit. Because we get by giving. We receive by doing. We reap what we sow. If we don't have a principle that keeps us focused on that, we get complacent. Think about it. I don't know how many of you have tied shoes on here, but can you tell me which lace you threw over the other lace? Did you think about that this morning? You know, we can come to these rooms so long that we become unconsciously competent. We walk around in here hugging and talking and we don't even see the person who's sitting beside us whose ass is in pain because we are living our program and we're happy and joyous and free. But we won't be that way. Or we're so self-absorbed in our own shit that we don't see that person. My sponsor taught me that the purpose of that 11th step, to maintain a conscious contact with God, God is our message. And we cannot give it away unless we can bring it to a conscious level. You can have God in your heart, God in your soul, and God in your head, but if you can't give God to a newcomer, you ain't got God. And you've got to bring God to that conscious level. If you want to teach somebody how to tie their shoes, you have to think about how you tied yours. If you want to give a message of recovery around here, you have to think about what was freely given to you, Bob. You got to look at what God did in your life. You got to look at all the people you trashed and the mistakes you made and the things you did and that God forgave you, healed you, removed the pain, and kept you clean for one more day. You got to bring that to a conscious level so that you can share that with the addict who still suffers, Bob. And Bob, when you get so self-absorbed with all this stuff that's whipping around out here, because after a while you start working this stuff, you get them blessings. You get a Porsche. You get a beautiful woman. You get a house. You get the sheriff saying, nope, your name's not on that docket today. Must have the wrong house. You get those. You know what my sponsor told me? Bob, it's easier to choke on a piece of steak than a mouthful of shit. My sponsor gave me very simple things that I could understand. I mean, if there's anybody here that understands what I just said, raise your hand. See me after the meeting. Would you all give him a little bag of shit and I'll show him? Or did you bring your own, man? See, we can get so self-absorbed in all the good things that are happening to us that we forget where they come from. See, we can get that all-powerful eye back. Well, I am successful. And people in the world are quick to tell you that. Guys, get a new Porsche. Get a pocket full of money. Get some new clothes and a haircut. Brush your teeth. Put a little deodorant on. And you will find a woman in NA who will tell you that you are great. Then they're in love with you. Yeah, you heard it. Or you've wanted to hear it. You just haven't got the money for the Porsche yet, but keep coming back. When we start to think that we are God, we are in real trouble. About 15 years in this program, I have a farm not too far from here. I got a wife who I dearly love. I got kids, and I got all the blessings. I woke up one day and I wanted to go to Iowa. I moved into a new office building with my partner, and I didn't unpack my boxes for 3 years. I didn't know what the hell was happening to me. I just became discontent. And the first thing I did was look at my wife and said, it's your fault. This marriage, we need to do something to spice this up. We still get the Victoria's Secret catalog. And she tried. Do you know that? This woman truly loves me. And she tried to fix me. Because she recognized that I was in some kind of pain. But when she couldn't fix me, she got a little disgruntled. A little. My partner, I couldn't understand why our relationship of 20-some years was kind of strained. Because he kept thinking I was going to jump ship. I don't know why I thought I was leaving just because I didn't unpack them boxes and kept looking at want ads and talking about all kind of other shit. We are a new fellowship. Guys my age, there's not many men who come before us to tell us that we do stupid shit when we get 15 years or so in recovery and hit them 40s. We start thinking stupid shit. We start looking for everything around us to fix us. We get most uncomfortable. Some of us do that privately, and some people do it publicly. And we impregnate our sponsees, our wives, sponsees, and we get all goofy, and we do all kind of crazy shit, and we act like we're a newcomer. And the men who have looked to us for spiritual leadership and for guidance and companionship start saying, well, that's some bitches. And they stop calling, and we get further isolated and further alone. And the only place that we get peace of mind is to be in prayer and meditation with God, which gets really resentful. I don't want to have to pray alone. I don't want to have to be in quiet and solitude to find that peace of mind. I had everything going. Why one day do I wake up and not there? Because God was taking me to a different place in my soul. First 5 years, he changed my head. The next 10 years, he changed my heart. Somewhere around 15 years, he's starting to talk to me about immortality, and he's starting to talk to me about how short my time is here and what I ought to do with it and not do with it, and that the men that I love and respect I need to stop competing with and start giving to. He started to change my whole being. My meditations now take on a completely different meaning than they ever took on before. I used to think up advice for guys and give them experience. And now, man, when I'm in prayer and meditation, I get a message for people that I sponsor. And I have shared it with them, and it ain't from me. It's out of that prayer and meditation and that relationship with God that comes from that prayer and solitude and meditation. Those people God wishes to use, he draws close to himself. And you don't find God outside. Find God inside. And you take God up into that consciousness and you push him outside. See, because for poor, powerless addicts, man, we hit that 12th step and we get a chance to serve. I just learned 3 things from a baby and 7 from a thief about how to serve. You learn to laugh, because if you can't laugh in these rooms, you're in trouble. Right? And you learn to cry, because we're going to bear each other's burdens in here, and some of us are going to go at different times, and we're going to feel the loss. And we learn to be busy. We learn that from a baby. From a thief, we learn that anything a thief does, he does in secret. Anonymity is a spiritual part of our foundation, just like that thief. We do, we should do in secret. We don't need to pump ourselves up by saying, oh man, I did this for this person, I did this, I did that. No, think about it, man. Would you go and really bury your heart with somebody who talks all kind of shit, who cannot keep a confidence, who you share something that's really painful in your heart and in your life and in your experience, and you go someplace and you hear it? We learn to do it in secret. We learn to be quiet. We learn to carry each other's burdens silently and not embarrass each other. You know, I watch people jump up and down out of meetings, walk across meetings, get coffee, talk shit, and disrespect each other in these meetings. If we can't respect each other in our meeting, how are we going to teach a newcomer respect? Now, if the people in there around here who've been around a long time talk bad, if we talk shit about each other, how do we expect people to stop that? If we say, did you hear what's happening to so-and-so, man, they're doing it. You know, it's okay when you first walk in the door, because that's all we got. Because that's what we do in institutions. We ain't got nothing else but gossip and to talk. You know, when there was 3 of us, if the one guy wasn't there, the other 2 of us talked about him, because that's all we had. But by the time you're getting out there in that 11th and 12th step, man, you got a life. That's what these things, these steps, these principles, is a life. This doesn't promise us money, fame, property, prestige, but it does promise us a life. A life that we get to choose how we will live. We learn what we can't steal today, we can come back tomorrow and steal. What you didn't get today here, come to a meeting tomorrow and listen for it. And if you don't get it all tomorrow, keep coming back. Thief is loyal to his accomplices because he knows that if nobody talks, everybody walks. That ain't rocket science shit if you're a thief. A thief will sacrifice for the object of his desire. How many of you reach in the pocket when this basket's passed and put a buck in it, or $2, or $5, or my God almighty, a $10 bill? Don't want to sacrifice that. No, no, man, I mean, I'm broke. Hell, man, but I'll go out here and eat the $40 dinner. Or waste a bunch of stuff, or I won't buy a newcomer a pack of cigarettes, or a meal, or put a couple of dollars in somebody's pocket who I know can really use it, or drop off Christmas presents at somebody's house for their kids because they're new in recovery and they don't have. Right? Thief will sacrifice to the object of his desire. If we want to be loving, giving, kind, tolerant, blessed folks, we got to act that way. Once the thief gets the object of his desire, he immediately loses interest in it. How many things have we been obsessed with? I know a guy that was obsessed with a raccoon coat. God got so tired of hearing this son of a bitch pray for it that he gave it to him. Now I want to see how many weeks he wears this damn thing before it hangs in the closet. See, that's right, man. You think about that, man, you had to have. Oh, shit, oh, man. And then you get, what the holy hell is this person, right? We You can't change a thief. You know why? Thief loves what he does. When you love carrying this message, you will not be taken off of it. See, when I get to that door and I get to that gate, I'm going to crack that son of a gun open, see? Because I'm going to tell God I was grateful. I'm grateful for the gift that you have given me and for a sick, powerless addict. You have given me the opportunity to carry the most powerful message that another addict can hear. The lie is dead, and we do recover through God and the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Narcotics Anonymous. God bless, and thanks for letting me share. You know what? For the people who were here when we started, and who were in pain, I hope that we have eased your pain, if nothing but for a minute. And if we have, come back to another meeting, because that's where it happens. Now, we also took a moment of prayer and silence for that person that we knew. You know, why don't we just take another moment of silence and thank God for giving us the opportunity to be together tonight and be focused and to share that love and to at least offer that person's name up to the God of our understanding that they might also be touched. Anybody want to lead us in a serenity prayer? Come on up, somebody. Come on. She's been smiling at me all night, making it easy for me to share. This little girl's been giving me hugs, and she's been smiling at me. This made it easy to share tonight.
Hi, everybody. My name is Panchita, Grateful Addict.
Hi,
family. Could we please take a moment for the addict that's still suffering? The babies that will be born today of the disease, the ones that will die from it, followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
Listen, I think we have some side mics here, and if you'd like to share, just go to the side mic. We'll run this for a little while. As a meeting, those who want to leave are free to leave, but if you want to stay in here and share, there's some side mics. Just go to one of those mics and feel free to share, please. Even this mic.
Hi, family. I'm an addict seeking recovery. My name is Phil.
Hi, Phil.
I'd like to first thank the higher power in my life, who I choose to call God, for having me here on this special night tonight and to be able to share and everybody else with their recovery. And I'd like to also thank the program in Narcotics Anonymous for starting to open up my eyes to a lot of things. I've been around here for, a few 24 seconds, or microseconds now. And I was starting to work the first step, and I thought I understood a little bit about, well, now let me get honest. I thought I had the first step under pretty good wraps. You know, I got a sponsor when I got in here within a week. I been going to meetings faithfully, got into service with the small amount that I had to give back, and been reading my text and using the phone list, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm really starting to get this thing. You know, I think I really got the grip on this first step here. And I was using the I word before I did it every time. And I got slapped down. Earlier this week, I ended up being unemployed, and it was through no fault of my own. It's just a lack of work, but I got a little taste of unmanageability and powerlessness, and I got some growth through my pain, and I obsessed about it, and I had feelings of worthlessness over it, and I learned the difference between I'm starting to learn the difference between ego and self-esteem. And more will be revealed, I'm sure. But I'm celebrating an anniversary tonight. 33 years. You may think, what, did he start getting clean in the womb? No, I got 33 years on the planet. Tonight is my birthday. And this is a present I gave myself. And it's also my first convention. And I got to share at my first convention. And it's my birthday. Damn, I got some gratitude tonight, let me tell you. There's other people here who want to share. And I hope this won't be my last convention either. And that's all I have. Thanks. Let me share.